This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I'm Evan Lazar, and I am joined, as always, by Adam Kirchin. And Adam, no news on the Tom Brady front. Unfortunately, we're still in a holding pattern on that one. Hopefully, we'll find out a little bit more next week in Indianapolis. But there was a little bit of news on the NFL collective bargaining agreement front and a proposed schedule that looks like it's all but finalized for the league for next year, starting in the 2021 season, I should say. So not the 2020 season, but 2021. So just wanted to get some quick thoughts on this, really just breaking news here about an hour ago. The proposal is 17 games in the regular season, taking away a preseason game to make that three. But the biggest thing I think is the seven playoff teams and only one bye team. So now we're going to get three games apiece wild card weekend. What was your initial reaction? I know neither one of us have really had a ton of time to think about this.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of these things with me, when they come out, the changes, I'm like, well, why do we need to make why mess with perfection? I mean, right now it seems perfect.
It is the perfect. It's the best playoff format out of any of the four major sports, I think.
I agree, and they're already making a boatload of money. I don't know why they feel like they need to make more. I mean, obviously, I can see why anyone would want to make more. It just doesn't seem like this is like a need. That said, I feel like this is something I could come around to. You know, I don't think I'll be kicking and screaming the whole way. But it's just, to me, do we need it? Not really. But is it going to be okay? I'm sure it'll be fine.
I think there's some concern about diluting the product a little bit of the playoffs, because you're going to have a team in some years that's probably going to be, well, now the records are all going to be messed up, but just for the 16 game schedule, it's probably going to be like an 8-8 or a 9-7 equivalent or something like that. And that team is now going to be the 7 seed playing a 2 seed that would normally have had a bye. But I think the biggest thing is that everything that's come out so far has been in favor of the owners, right? More games, more money, right? More playoff teams, more money, all those kinds of things. What are the players getting out of this? That's like kind of what I'm curious to see, is are they going to get health care for life? Are they going to get lesser kind of restrictions on drug policies and drug testing, like on things like marijuana? Are they going to get some kind of things back from the league, bigger cut of revenue, whatever case may be? Or is this going to be, once again, the owners just kind of walking all over the players? And I think a lot of the players would tell you that 10 years ago, that is exactly what happened in that CBA negotiation. The other thing that more kind of turning it towards the Patriots, I think it's pretty crucial. Right at the top of Adam Schefter's report, he says that the two sides have made some significant progress in the last week, and this thing, the CBA, might get done before free agency, which would be massive news for the Patriots, because they then can get Tom Brady's contract figured out in a more manageable way for the cap. Because in a last year of a CBA-type season, there is all the kind of like tricks that you use to lower cap hits. Those go out the door. You can no longer tack on voidable years at the end of the deal. You have the 30% rule to worry about. So if they can get this deal done before free agency, it does make it easier for Brady to go and have his, you know, free agent kind of tour, have people come to him, as Tom Curran reported or whatever, have his free agency kind of soiree, and then come back to the Patriots and still sign back here after March 18, because now they will be able to have the voidable years. They won't have to worry about the 30% rule. This is all kind of tentative, obviously, assuming that this gets done. But I think that bit of news from a Patriots perspective is probably the biggest takeaway from all this.
Yeah, and it's funny how really everything comes back to Brady.
Yeah, if it gets done quickly, it is massive for Tom Brady's, you know, prospects of coming back to the Patriots, because if you can't tack on those dummy years onto his next contract and spread out his cap hit for 2020 over 3 or 4 seasons or whatever the case may be, he is going to be owed, you know, you're going to have something like a $40 million cap hold on his contract for 2020.
Yeah. My prediction has been that, you know, he's going to come back to the Patriots. And so, you know, maybe that helps. But I feel like, you know, with this, there's so many angles to it. Everybody is kind of in on it because, you know, even a semi-good team with pretty good receivers or something like that finds themselves in the middle of this somehow.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of cities just are like, well, hey, you know, we're a great city, and you know, Giselle would like it here better than wherever. You know, it's it has so many layers to it at this point, and I feel we're still like in the beginnings of it. You know, it doesn't feel like Absolutely. Something that's coming to an end anytime soon.
I also think, and there are definitely some teams that I think fit this bill that have been brought up by some people. But the big teams that have always been consistently brought up are the Vegas Raiders and the Chargers. Yes. I think that neither team is very likely right now for Tom Brady, and it's going to be a third kind of dark horse team that he actually is more interested in than people realize. The Tennessee Titans have obviously come up in every discussion as of late, especially. That's the team that I think that I look at as the real, true kind of sleeping giant. You know, if you get Vrabel, who's his buddy, and you get him, and you got a couple of Patriots down there already, obviously, and Patriots, former Patriots staffers. There's a lot to like about Tennessee if you're Tom Brady, and that team, to me, makes a whole lot more sense than going to a team like the Chargers or like the Raiders, just based off of the way they play offense. You get Brady under center in that offense, assuming they re-sign Derrick Henry or bring Derrick Henry back on some sort of deal, they're going to want to be an under center team. And that's Tom Brady's bread and butter right there. You put him under center, you let him run play action, especially at this stage of his career. That's really where he's been at his best. So I think that the Titans still are kind of the sleeping giant in all of this as a team that is, for the most part, sounds like they're trying to stay away from truly tampering with Tom Brady. The Raiders have told Tom Brady, you have 2 years, $60 million on the table from us a month before free agency. They don't give a crap about tampering with them, right?
Yeah.
They've told everybody, they've told Brady, they've told everybody publicly that they're prepared to make that offer. The Titans seem to be kind of, you know, laying in the weeds a little bit more.
Yeah. And it becomes one of those games, right, where you just pick any team in the league and why would they fit with Brady, you know, and it feels like everybody's sort of been playing that game and the league's been playing that game. You know, a hot name for a little bit was the Cowboys. Just because Dak might not, you know, be coming back there and stuff like that. I mean, what a win that would be for Dallas is if they don't sign Dak and, you know, they pick up Tom Brady. And
QB swap maybe.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. It's got a million different little pieces to it at this point. So you just want to sort of just hang back and try to sift through the madness and try to find something that makes sense.
Absolutely. And we weren't going to hit on Brady at all, but obviously, as all things like I said, it comes back to Brady eventually, no matter what we do. And we are going to get to a combine preview next week, obviously, is the NFL scouting combine. Adam and I have put together lists of five players each, and we're going to go back and forth there in just a minute. But before we do, the footballs might be packed away, but basketball, hockey, golf, maybe the XFL, as you can find all these odds with our exclusive sportsbook partners, betonline.ag. They have been in the industry for over 20 years, providing customers with the first-to-market odds and giving you the ability to bet anytime, anywhere. Head over to betonline.ag and use our promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit and have a little fun with some of the betting action today. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. XFL, maybe get some XFL bets in there. Cardale Jones right now is tearing it up. PJ Walker, you know, a couple players there in that XFL that people might recognize. But let's talk about some draft guys. That's the meat of the show. That's what we're excited to do. Let's just go back and forth. You can start us off with your first name here. Just guys, these are watch list type guys, guys that both me and Adam are looking out for next week at the Combine.
Yeah, you know, everybody's got to have a one quarterback, and, you know, there's been a bunch that I was looking at. But one guy that I think bears watching is Jacob Eason, the quarterback out of Washington. They obviously a transfer from Georgia, and this is a very transfer-heavy, quarterback market right now. But, you know, with Eason, you're looking at a guy who, you know, every year in the draft, it seems like there's one or two guys who throw so hard in person that these scouts in Indianapolis will go there and they'll see how hard the guy throws.
Yeah.
And they'll forget everything else about the guy's evaluation and say, I want a guy who can chuck it that hard.
Yeah.
And I think that Eason is possibly that guy in this year's quarterback class. He's got a super strong arm. He's been inconsistent on the field. He's got some decent film in some games. I mean, I was watching the Oregon film, and he played really well that game. They did lose, but that was a good Oregon defense, and Eason did well against it. But, you know, you wonder if he can really elevate a team, and that was not really something he was able to do at Washington with a pretty decent supporting cast. I'm not going to say it's their best team since Peterson's been there, but I think he's somebody that could go out there, throw it so hard that, you know, it just grabs people's attention. And maybe he does skip Love. I doubt he skips Herbert, who's also got a pretty strong arm. But yeah, and it's interesting too, those quarterback drills that they run, you know, where they have guys go out for passes and they throw like out routes and, you know, fades and stuff like that.
Right.
Those aren't as automatic as you'd think as just throwing against nobody, because some guys really don't do well.
Yeah.
The accuracy of those things where they wait for the guy to break before they throw a pass, you know, those out routes and stuff like that. And those sideline routes can be really, really revealing. Yeah. So, you know, anything can happen, you know, but he's somebody that I think could look good in that setting.
I think so too. He's a guy that when you watch him, and I've only watched him live in a couple of games of review, but overall, when you watch him, the downfield anticipation is really good. You know, he'll throw the ball to an area, expecting the receiver to run into that area. And I agree that a lot of the things that you said about the drills and the way that he's going to look, the arm talent, the confidence that he has in his arm, sometimes a little bit too much confidence, but he has a ton of confidence. The other thing for the Patriots that I really like about him is how he works in the play action passing game. Mm-hmm. I think that that's a really big part of his game and something that I think that when you look at it, not a lot of college quarterbacks operate play action under center in the college level. So turning your back to the defense and then bringing your eyes forward again is a skill that and just the footwork with the drops and all that kind of stuff and the work at the mesh point with the ball handling, it's different than doing it from the gun, right? You know, when you're doing it from the gun, you can still survey the defense. You're not turning your back. You're not doing all that kind of stuff. Eason has experience doing it from under center, and he showed some really good rhythm and really good on-time throws from play action that I really intriguing to me. A lot of mock drafts early on in this process have Eason as a first-round pick. I think that a lot of mocks I've seen, even from guys that I respect, have him closer to the top 10 than the bottom the first round also because of the arm talent, because of the abilities that we're talking about, because most of his issues are big armed quarterback issues, like his lower body mechanics and his footwork. He kind of sometimes throws those things out the door because he can just throw it through a keyhole when he wants to. So he doesn't necessarily need to focus as much as on those types of things. The next level, he'll have to do that. And that's kind of the question that I have about him is he going to be able to refine everything and kind of fine tune his decision making? Because sometimes he just trusts his arm so much that he just throws it down the field and gets himself into trouble. And then the mechanics piece of it, the quarterback that I wanted to go with is actually kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum. So that's pretty good. It's Nate Stanley from Iowa. And he, to me, is like this year's like Kyle Luletta or someone like that, that hopefully has a little bit more arm strength than those types of guys. But a guy that just throws with great anticipation, great touch, a really nice catchable ball, and fits perfectly in a decision-making type offense like the Patriots.
Yeah, that's the number one thing I come away from it is like that offense is a, you know, I hate to use the term pro-style offense, but like when people talked about that for a long time, I mean, it was an offense like Iowa's.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they put a good amount on the quarterback. I mean, he's had experience, you know, throwing to the tight end a lot. I like that.
Yep.
I mean, he had Hockenson and Fant 2 years ago and before that. I think he's – like, I don't think he's a tremendous athlete or anything like that. You know, like, I don't think he's somebody that, like, play breaks down and it's like, oh, look out, here comes, you know, Nate Stanley.
Right.
So.
No, definitely.
But I think, you know, he's somebody who could go into an NFL camp and pick up what's being put down really well. And yeah. I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, how he fares in that respect. Like, physically, I don't see him as, like, this super stud. You know, I don't think he's one of those guys that's going to jump off, you know, the field to you that way. But mentally, I think he's going to be pretty well prepared.
Yeah, and he's really – I think that's a great point because he – the attention to detail that he has in his game is obvious. The mechanics are really sound. The comfortability within the scheme and within the offense, his play action fakes and the way that he kind of goes about handling the ball as well – he obviously takes a lot of pride in the little things. And the Patriots offense, and we know this about Tom Brady, obviously is maniacal about the little things, but the Patriots offense as a whole is a little things offense, right? It's not so much about the big picture. Are you the fastest? Are you the strongest? Are you the most athletic guy? It's often about what's between the ears and just the little minutiae and little details. I think Nate Stanley is the type of guy that would be able to handle all of that kind of stuff and brings some of it already with him. All right, let's get off the quarterbacks, I think, right? We're done. We got two quarterbacks, one quarterback each. Who's the next guy on your list?
I'm going to go local. Okay. And with a running back, A.J. Yeah. Dillon from Boston College.
Oh, man, if the Patriots draft another running back early, people are going to lose their minds. But let's talk about it anyway.
I know. I'm just going with the local back.
You
know, A.J., I watched him up close in practices and scrimmages and games and everything while he was at BC. They list him at 250 pounds.
Oh man,
he moves so well. He's not a slow 250.
Yeah,
this is a breakaway back at 250 pounds, 240 pounds, whatever he's going to end up. I'm very excited to see what he runs in the 40-yard dash. I think he can run in the high 4.4s or the low 4.5s. I think he said before that he can run in the 4.4s. I'm not sure. I don't have that quote on me, but I think I went to the NFL.com draft tracker. They had comparisons. They had James Conner.
Yeah.
That's a comparison to the only thing he has in common with Conner is his size. He's much, much more explosive than that. Like, yeah. Conner's not like a home run threat with the way I feel that Dillon is. I think that some people will say that Dillon doesn't have great hands, but he has good hands. They just didn't really throw it to him that much at BC because it wasn't really part of their offense, but he can do a lot of different things. And this is a guy that really has a next step on the competition with his speed. But I'm curious to see what he does in his 40. I think he can get into those 4.4s and then you might see him shoot up draft boards.
Like I said, I think a lot of Patriots fans would be disappointed if they take a running back before day three. And Dillon might fall to day three. I don't think so. But some rankings have him down pretty low, especially in a really good skill position class and a decent running back class. He's going to have a tough time, I think, cracking that like kind of top five running backs. But for the Patriots, I think what's really good about him is I think he fits the running scheme that they run perfectly. You know, he's a guy that I probably wouldn't love in his own scheme, but you bring him to more of a power gap type of offense like the Patriots typically are. They run some zone stuff, obviously. They're multiple, but they run a mostly gap, you know, pulling guards and counter and fullback lead and things like that. You put Dillon in the backfield, deep in the backfield, you put a fullback in front of him and you let him kind of build up that speed before he hits the line of scrimmage. That's going to be a really tough guy to tackle. And I think that there's a nice natural fit there. The other thing I think that would be really nice for the Patriots is that he's really great in short yardage. Mm-hmm. The back definitely can do that very, very well. They haven't exactly, Sony Michel hasn't blossomed into that role. They've kind of tried Rex Burkhead in that role a little bit. They could use a guy that can pick up a yard, you know, and really lower the pad and really kind of get that yard more of a guarantee. So on third and fourth and one, they're not always sneaking. They're not running jet sweeps like they did against Buffalo last year. They're just coming right at you. And I think Dillon is probably at his best, maybe, in short yardage goal line type situations and just turning out those tough yards. So I do like his fit a lot, even though I don't love the idea of them taking another running back. His fit overall in the offense as a runner is really, really nice.
No. So what we got next here is Justin Jefferson.
Yes, of course.
We're going to go very heavy LSU on this one.
Of course we are. And Justin Jefferson, I am quickly, Adam, I'm quickly falling in love with him at 23. Like, I really think that he might be the pick in my eyes. That will mean that he is 100% not the pick in Bill Belichick's eyes. But in my eyes, in terms of this receiver class, and this is, of course, assuming that you're missing out on the big three. You're missing out on the two Alabama guys and CeeDee Lamb, and you're kind of picking from the rest of the crop. The way that he runs routes and the precision that he runs routes with and the explosiveness at the top of the break and his ability to run option routes and set up defenders and read out leverages and break off of the leverage of the defensive back that he's facing, it's just so Patriots. It's just exactly the type of receiver that they need. And I think he's going to go to the combine, and this is kind of spinning it towards the combine. I'm really interested to see how fast he runs in the 40, because there is some concerns about him having that kind of top-end long speed. You know, is he a 4.5 guy, or is he a 4.4 guy? If he runs fast, I can't imagine him lasting much longer than pick 23. And the Patriots need a wide receiver. They need playmakers, and he just fits the bill of what they want to do in their offense. In terms of a draft prospect, he is just the perfect Z receiver in their offense. He's Edelman's, you know, kind of his what's it? We did this last week too. He's the guy after Edelman, right? You know, he's that guy perfectly in my book. And I know that you don't mind it being an LSU guy.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting because he lined up all over the place.
He really did. LSU.
And that offense was sort of like a master offense for, like, passing game. Like, he threw 60 touchdowns, bro, or something close to that. It felt like Jefferson liked that part of it. It felt like he liked the mental side of it. He's a decent blocker in the run game, too, even for a guy that's pretty slight. But I think if he runs anywhere in the 4.4s, if he runs like a 4.49 even, he's probably going in the first round. I think enough people saw him and, you know, like what he's been able to do to sort of take him in the first round, so long as his 40 isn't bad. You know, if he runs like a 4.65, then that's another thing. But I think if he runs a good 40, like in the 4.4s, he's going in the first round. I just like his versatility. I think he works the middle of the field really well. I think that's one of the things he's best at is sort of short crossing routes, deep crossing routes. He's really good at that, and he's very good too with scramble rules. So if the quarterback's sort of off his game and he's sort of needs guys to make plays for him downfield, like Jefferson was really good at that. So I think he's, you know, somebody that Patriots fans should be excited if they got him. You know, I loved watching him obviously at LSU, and he's just, he's an exceptional route runner, and he makes unbelievable catches sometimes too. So I think
he's always open.
Yeah.
Always open. You turn on an LSU game and he is just even more so than Chase at times. I would say he's just always freaking open. And that's just the exact type of guy that this offense needs. They don't need another N'Keal Harry. I like LaVisca Chenault a lot. But I look at him and I see a lot of the same issues I saw with N'Keal Harry in college. And Justin Jefferson is the absolute opposite of those types of guys. And I think that's exactly what they need.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I mean, he's, again, like if he runs in the 4.4s, even if he gets down to, like I said, like, you know, 4.49, that's fine. You know, that you can live there with him because he's such a good route runner. And he's so good at creating separation. And he's good after the catch, too. He made some excellent plays after the catch this year. So that makes me think that his speed is pretty good.
Absolutely, he's my guy. I'm locked in on it in February. I'm just gonna say it right now. All right, who's next?
Well, for me, we're going to go to, back to a wide receiver, KJ Hamler from Penn State.
Oh, yeah. Speed,
baby. Yeah, this is a guy that I saw, I forget who it was against last year, not this past year, but the year before, when he was a redshirt freshman. And he made some play out of halftime, some long touchdown catch. I was like, Jesus, who is that kid? And the reason why I listed him for the combine is I'm curious to see what his 40 time is going to be, because he's somebody that could threaten a 4.3 somewhere. He just looks so fast.
He's blazing.
I'm just curious to see how much, you know, that's the camera messing with you or something like that, or if it's just the guys he was going against. But he looks really fast. And I think he can play. I don't think he's in that first wave of guys that's going to be taken, but he's so fast and so explosive and can take the top off like that. I think that if he runs a fast 40, a really fast 40, then he can play his way into like a higher pick.
He's exactly the type of guy that is kind of starting to take over the NFL at the receiver position a little bit. They're smaller, but man, can they run. And the rules nowadays, you just can't get overly physical with guys anymore, especially down the field. And guys like KJ Hamler are just really, really tough to keep up with in man coverage when, you know, you can't really jam them, and when you can't jam them outside of 5 yards, and you can't make contact or tug on the jersey or do any sort of thing that you might get flagged for. He has a lot more nuance to his route running than I expected. When I watched him at first at Penn State, watching him live, I was like, oh, this is like Mecole Hardman 2.0, right? Yeah. This is just another kind of guy that's a gadget type player. You give him the ball in space, you throw him deep shots, screen game underneath crossers or jet sweeps or whatever the case may be. And just get the ball in his hands because he's electric, right? And Hamler's definitely like that to some degree. But the way that he wiggles at the top of the route and sets up breaks and false set, you know, kind of gets the DB leaning one way and then triggers out the other way. That kind of stuff is, the shiftiness is something that is really, really impressive and just something I wasn't fully expecting him to be that refined with all of his route running. I think he's going to end up being a top 50 pick because you add the route running ability, the yak mode ability. After the catch, you know, he'll take a slant 5 yards, 75 yards to the house. He did in that one game. I forget who it was against, but the highlights all over the place. Might have been Michigan. The highlights all over the place where he takes a slant 90 yards to the house. You know, he's that type of explosive. And the only really thing that when I watch him, that concerns me at all about him is that his hands and just the way that he catches the ball isn't always the best. He's got a little bit of like a clapping thing going on, and he lets the ball get into him a little bit because he is smaller. But in terms of just getting the ball in this guy's hands and him creating separation and then being able to create after the catch, he is the guy that everybody wants nowadays. He's, you know, in that mold, and I'm not saying he's as good as these guys, but he's in the mold of the Hollywood Browns, the Tyreek Hills, the Mecole Hardmans, that kind of player, which is obviously where the league is going at this position.
Yeah, and so you can see him, say he runs like a 4.35, and everybody's talking about him at the combine. His stock is going to shoot up, and I think he's one of these guys who the combine helps a lot, you know, like he just flashes right. That big number or that low number on the 40, and then boom, right. Well, then everybody wants him.
Yeah. You got Ruggs. Henry Ruggs will be up there for sure. You got Hamler. I think Jalen Reagor from TCU will be up there as well. But I really think it's between Ruggs and Hamler in terms of who's going to run the fastest 40. I wouldn't be surprised if Hamler cracks the high 4.2s, honestly. Wow. If he puts out a 4.29, I don't think that would be all that surprising. I want to move over to the defensive side of the ball for the next one here, though, and go with an edge setter, AJ Epenesa from Iowa again. And I think the biggest thing about Epenesa is that two things. One, this time last year, he was looked at as the consensus top edge rusher in this class. Everybody pretty much had him as a lock for the top 10. His stock has fallen a little bit since then, but 6'6", 280, The Patriots have a need at both defensive end, I think, and also if Kyle Van Noy gets in free agency, they're going to need to fill that outside linebacker, strong side outside linebacker role that Van Noy played this last season. I think Epenesa can do both. Really, really strong hands, punching power, great toolbox of moves. The only reason why he's falling a little bit is because he doesn't have like an electric first step. You know, he's not a type of guy that's a screamer off the edge, but he's your edge setter against the run. He's your guy that's going to cave in the pocket and really be able to beat guys with nuance and a wide variety of pass rush moves. And those are usually the type of guys that succeed pretty well in Belichick's system.
Yeah. You look at him and you think this guy is just super strong.
His hands are hammers.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's fun to watch how he overpowers guys. But he's also one of these guys you're going to look at the combine and say, okay, is he going to, like, you know, give 400 on the bench press or something, you know, like,
right.
How much is he going to knock that out? But yeah, I'm curious to see how he runs. I mean, it would really help himself if he ran well. Do you think it kind of helps him that people don't expect him to go out there and run like a great time with any of those drills? But I feel like he is somebody that's going to be around where the Patriots pick if people are sort of mocking it correctly, because he seems to be around there, you know?
Absolutely.
And so
that's why I wanted to bring his name up, because I think that he's really right in that range. You know, yeah. The Draft Network guys have him as the 18th ranked prospect right now in the draft overall, which when you start to think about positional value and all that kind of stuff, the quarterbacks are obviously going to get bumped up a little bit. There's a lot of really good tackles in this draft that are certainly going to get bumped up a little bit. He's going to fall somewhere in that 15 to 25 range, and they're going to have a need for a guy to play the edge. And he has the body. He has the power at the point of attack. They obviously don't want anything getting outside of those edge guys in the running game. And he's got the ability to hold up and avoid being kicked out and stay in the gap and force those running plays back to the inside.
Yeah. I think they can even kick him down in one of the interior spots for certain downs.
Yeah.
I think he's just, downs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's just one of those guys. So, again, another Iowa guy too. So, you know, that gives you some. You know, they always scout Iowa pretty well, and are pretty close with that staff. So, yeah, I think, you know, AJ's a terrific player. I'm surprised really that he's dropped a little bit, because I think he's always sort of been the same player. Just sort of that dominant pass
early
rusher.
Early in the draft, it's just always so much about that your first step and the explosiveness that you come with out of your stance. If you're not a guy that's going to really turn the corner, you have to be essentially Bradley Chubb-esque complete, you know, in the other phases of the game. Otherwise, you're going to fall down the draft. And I think that Epenesa is not Bradley Chubb. But he does have that same kind of, I got everything else besides the elite quickness and the elite burst.
Right.
And maybe he will surprise some people at the combine. And really, it's that 10-yard split that's really important. And the jumps, I think, are important, too, for explosiveness as well. Maybe that is where he kind of shows up and his draft stock goes back to being one of the top guys. I just remember scouting guys from last year's draft and people being like, Epenesa is the guy next year. You know, he's the guy that everybody's going to want at the top of the draft as a pass rusher. And it hasn't turned out that way so far in the early part of the draft process. And if people go away from him, then the Patriots are going to just be sitting there. And I think Belichick would be, you know, really, really pleased with him just sitting there at 23.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. So we're going to move next on here.
Yes.
I'm going to bounce back over to the offensive side of the ball.
Okay.
This is all right. Now, this is funny. I guess a little background on this is that during the college football season, on a Saturday or a Saturday night, I will see a kid or a player or a team I really like, and I'll text Evan. And I remember one of the earliest examples of this last year, or not this past year, but the year before, was Michael Pittman, the wide receiver at USC. And
now you're in my territory.
Yeah, exactly. But it was so funny. I remember I was at a friend's house watching like Pac-12 After Dark. It was like not much going on, and this USC game is on in the background, And I see Pittman make like three ridiculous plays in a row. I forget which game it was now, but I was like, who is this? And I obviously a USC guy texted Evan. I was like, hey, you know, what's up with this so-and-so? And you're like, yep, this is my guy, Pittman. He's good. Every time I've seen him play, he's made big plays, and he's like a big contested catch guy. I don't know if the combine is going to be great for him because I don't see him as like a unreal speed guy or anything like that. But he gets open and he catches the ball, and like he makes really good catches when he's got defenders draped all over him. I think he's a heck of a player. But again, is he what the Patriots are looking for? I'm not sure. What do you think?
It's a good question. You know, he's not the type of guy that Patriots fans want, right? He's another downfield contested catch guy that's going to be draped all over in coverage a lot of the time. Not that difficult to stick with. He's got enough speed, though, I think, and he's got a really good technical savvy about vertical route running that he's able to hold the red line and get stacked and do those types of things even without elite speed. The game against Utah is the game you got to watch. That might have been the game that you were watching. 10 catches, 232 yards, and a touchdown. Probably one of the most dominating wide receiver tapes that you're going to watch throughout this entire draft process. Just three or four catches down the field where it was just a man amongst boys. You know, he's just going over three Utah defenders, and Utah had a good defense. That was not a slouch of a Utah team this past year.
Very good. That was their strength.
Absolutely. And he just went up and he caught balls on all of their DBs just right over their heads. And they couldn't deal with the physicality and the jump ball ability. They just couldn't hang with it. But he's got a little bit more nuance to him than I think that just jump balls. He's just not that explosive of an athlete. But he's a mean guy. He's going to block in the running game. He's mean after the catch. But the biggest thing that I like most about his route running is the ability to stack, put the defensive back on his back, both on vertical routes and coming across the field to really protect the catch point. So to make it easier and set himself up for those contested catches so that he doesn't have guys always constantly getting hands in between his hands to try to get that ball out. He does a really nice job of protecting and boxing out the catch point. And not the type of guy that Patriots fans want. We talked about Hamler. We talked about Justin Jefferson. Those are the types of guys Patriots fans want. But Pittman is the type of guy that I think is as probably dominant as a contested catch guy as N'Keal Harry was last year at Arizona State.
Yeah, I agree. And had a great Senior Bowl, too. No, I was thinking of somebody else. Did Pittman have a great Senior Bowl? Who am I thinking?
Yeah, Pittman had a decent Senior
Bowl. Yeah.
You know, he's really the type of guy, though, that I think all of the proof is in the pudding. Like, it's all on tape, right? Yeah. If you go last year, he had 100 catches last year in that USC offense.
Yeah.
And if you really go and you focus on what he did at USC, the tape is all there for him. Again, it's just like we've been saying, is he going to, how fast is he going to run? He's 6'4", 225 pounds. So he's not going to blaze, right? He's not going to come in here and run a 4.3. But if he can run in the low 4.5s like N'Keal did at the combine, then he's going to be in that, at least in that second round conversation, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so okay, who you got next?
I'm going to tight ends now, and I'm going to go with Josiah DeGuara from Cincinnati, who is kind of this hidden gem that I came across that's, I think, going to become no longer a hidden gem very quickly here, especially next week at the combine. He is as versatile as they come at the position. I think he could play a little bit off the line. He can play in line. He can play in the slot. He can play outside. He can play a little bit of H-back or fullback, and you move him around the backfield. Really smooth athlete in and out of his breaks. That was the thing that impressed me the most, was how snappy and just in control his hips are. You know, he can really angle his hips from going straight to kind of on an angle, like on a quick post or a slant, and he gets those hips pointed in the new direction so quickly that he can really just fluidly move from one direction to another, which at his size is pretty rare. All-out effort in the blocking game, all-out effort as a player, just 110% of the time, this guy's going balls to the wall. The first thing I posted about on his thread when I did his thread the other night was a play where he's on the backside and the quarterback rolls out and he is protecting on the backside of the rollout and the quarterback throws a pick at the goal line. And you see DeGuara streak across diagonally across the screen and tackle the cornerback before he returns it for a pick six. And it was like a Ben Watson type moment for him, right? You know, just making that kind of effort play and chasing the guy down. I think that he's a much better athlete than people think, and he's really going to wow some people at the combine. And that's the type of guy that I'm really interested in looking at for the Patriots and that kind of next wave of tight ends, assuming that they don't go for a guy like a Kmet or a guy like a Thad Moss or whoever the case may be. I think DeGora is kind of that nice sleeper pick there.
I like him a lot. I didn't really know who he was until we did some pregame for this show. And I watched some of his film, and man, I mean, he runs routes better than some receivers.
He's such a good route runner.
He's really nuanced and skilled and very good there. He loses guys at the top of his route. His change of direction skills are very good for a tight end, and I think he's got great hands. And like you said, that effort's there the entire time on film. So I like him a lot. He's somebody that. Again, I didn't really know too much about, but, you know, you watch his film, it's hard not to like it. You know, you really got to like how he sort of gets out there and gets open and makes plays. And, you know, he was a real weapon for Cincinnati this year.
It's a really interesting pick because I think a lot of people are kind of under the impression that the Patriots are if they do draft a tight end, it's going to be this name brand tight end. You know, it's going to be a Thad Moss. It's going to be a Kmet. It's going to be whoever. And DeGora has kind of flown under the radar, and I think that he has a chance to be that sneaky pick.
Yeah, he could be pretty good.
This is your last one, isn't it?
My last one, going to go again with a little predictable linebacker from LSU, even though some might call him a defensive end in the 4-3, like a weak side defensive end, or, you know, a 3-4 outside linebacker. Clevon Chaison from LSU. Again, like, this is somebody who maybe a year ago, before he was coming back from his injury, people would have had him a little bit higher, I guess. You know, this year for defensive coordinator David Aranda, Chaison dropped back some. He did a lot of rushing the passer as sort of like that fourth pass rusher. But he was somebody that coming to LSU had a lot of high expectations, known as a big pass rusher. Didn't always produce. But if you're talking about a guy at the combine – who's going to tear it up, this is that guy.
Because he's got to draft traits at that position, I think.
Yeah.
College production's nice, but the guys that have the traits are often the guys that eventually bring that to the NFL.
So this is a guy that I feel like can have such a huge combine that he'll be pushed up into like the 10-15 range. So sure. He might be a little too rich. But I think this is somebody that could still, you know, with those guys who are saying, well, where's his college production? He still might fall to somewhere where the Patriots are picking, in which case he'd be a hard guy to turn down because he is so versatile and he is so athletic. And a guy that had sort of a similar knock on him coming into the league was Danielle Hunter, who went to the Vikings and had much better pro production than he did.
The poster child for this, yeah.
Yeah, than he did at LSU. So, I mean, that's why I kind of feel like the combine is going to be interesting because I think he can really blow it out.
Talk about a guy to replace Kyle Van Noy. This is about as good as it would get in terms of replacing a guy that can play strong side edge as like a stand up outside linebacker, or as you said, more of a weak side guy, probably in a 4-3. But I think he also might have the ability with his athleticism to play some in the box too, as some off the ball linebacker, if they want to move him around to there also. But his biggest thing, his most obvious trait when you watch him is the first step explosiveness. I mean, he comes out of his stance like a rocket ship. That's going to be something that I think a lot of NFL teams are it's going to be hard for teams to turn it down is where I'm going with this. You know, you have that type of first step explosiveness, the motor always running, revving really hot all the time. And he's got some really good hand technique and pass rush counters to him as well. He can play the run, really good awareness against the run, I thought, watching him in the couple of games that I was able to get a hold of. But I was really mostly impressed with the hand usage and his ability to really set the edge and be able to set the edge strong against the run, but then also use his hands and his counters as a pass rusher. That rip and dip move is lethal. The long arm is lethal. The speed to power is really good too. I think he's got a lot more kind of going on for him, a lot more nuance than the production really said at LSU. And I think a lot of the reason why the production wasn't as high at LSU as it might have been other places is because of Aranda, in a way. You know, Aranda's the type of guy, there's so much of it is scheme, right? And the sim pressures and the blitz packages and all the crazy stuff that Aranda does extremely, extremely well for your team, obviously, in terms of your defense. But at the same time, it might hurt some of the guys that would normally be rushing the passer 45, 50 times a game. Now you're asking them to do some different stuff. And I think that sometimes that leads to the production being down a little bit. That ACL tear is going to be interesting in 2018. You know, that's going to be the big one, is what does that knee look like medically? Next week is going to be huge for him with the medical checks. Obviously, he played the whole year last year, so it wasn't an issue for him last year. But just in terms of the longevity of his career, you know, what's the knee issue? What's that look like? If he hadn't tore his ACL in 2018, I think people would already be talking about him as a top 10 pick. I assume after the combine, he's going to go in that range as well. He's, you know, guys like a Montez Sweat, for example. You mentioned Daniel Hunter. Montez Sweat's another one who just destroyed the combine last year, like stupid combine, right? And I think Chazon has a chance to do something similar to that. And if he does, then he's going to be off the board. But man, if they could get him to kind of come in there and take over for Kyle Van Noy, that would be ideal for the Patriots.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to move on to
the last one. Yes, the son of an NFL player. Go figure that we would do something like that. We got Jake Eason in here, who's not Tony Eason's son, so let's not make that mistake. Antoine Winfield Jr. from Minnesota, not the best athlete, not the rangiest deep safety, but just fantastic instincts, great football IQ, always around the ball, good man coverage skills against tight ends, can fill in the box against the run and play a little bit more of like a strong safety role. He's a little bit undersized for that role. He's not the fastest guy in the world, but he's just a football player. I hate that cliche, but that's just really the truth of it, is kind of sums up that what he is.
Yeah. It's kind of fun watching him. Isn't it? Like, he's always around the ball. Like, he finds ways to make plays. He's like a very poor man's. I'm not saying he's as good as this player, but he reminds me of how Honey Badger played.
Yeah.
You know, when he was there. And so, like, this guy, he, you know, certain players just sort of know what's going to happen, you know, and they get to the ball before everybody else does. He's also a great, not great, but I mean, he had some great punt returns. You know, so you can tell this is somebody that the coaching staff there was very confident in. You know, he's always forced fumble, recovered fumble, interception, sack, you know, strip sack, you know, everything. Like, it's just one thing after another. He's doing well. And you want players like that on your team. You know, I think the combine is going to be very interesting because he doesn't look like he jumps off the screen athletically. But I think he's somebody that could – if he does, and I think everybody sort of knows that going into this, if he does have at least like one or two good things, like a good 40 time or whatever, I doubt he's going to have a great 40 time. But, I mean, he doesn't seem like he's a very big guy either, even though he's pretty jacked. You know, if he's got a couple good, you know, reps here at the combine in whatever, it'd be very beneficial. But this kid can really play. He's got great film.
It's not – the Patriots haven't had the best history with unathletic safeties, when I put it that way, right? Guys that they've drafted at that position that don't move the best has not necessarily worked out for the best with the Patriots. And I think that there is some concern. I don't think he's a center fielder, even though his instincts are great and his ball skills are great. I don't think he's a center fielder. And they only list him at 195. So I'm really interested to see if he's bulked up a little bit since, or if he's not a true 195 or whatever the case may be. But he does have kind of that versatility, the instincts, the IQ, the ability to absorb information, to play a role that will eventually resemble what Patrick Chung does for the Patriots now. Play a little bit in the deep half, play some man coverage against tight ends, fill in the box, play underneath zones, all that kind of stuff, and do it really, really well. And we've talked all since the season ended. We've talked wide receivers. We've talked tight ends. We've talked quarterbacks. Don't sleep on safety. Don't sleep on safety as a position where they could go in the draft. Xavier McKinley, Grant Delpit, Antoine Winfield Jr. I could have picked any of those three guys. And I don't think any of those three guys are out of the question with their first pick in this draft, because Devin McCourty's getting up there. He's a free agent. I think he's going to be back. But if he's not back, that makes us need even more so of a need. But all three of those guys, Chung, McCourty, and Harmon, they're not getting any younger. And at some point in time, they're going to have to start drafting some safeties here and get some youth at that position. It's obviously a really difficult position to play the Patriots defense. A ton of information thrown at you, a ton of different assignments thrown at you in a game plan. You have to be able to do just about everything and absorb just about everything and know the defense extremely well. From that standpoint, Winfield, I think, is really the guy out of that group. I think McKinney from Alabama and Delpit from LSU are more physically gifted players than Winfield is, and guys that are going to test better in the combine and jump out at you more on the tape. And McKinney certainly with his hit stick, and Delpit with his ball skills. But Winfield Jr.'s ability to absorb and handle all that information sets him apart, I think, a little bit from those two guys.
Yeah, it's funny how Delpit, maybe by this time last year, is nowhere near in the Patriots range.
No.
But it helps the Patriots, I guess, that he had a really bad year in some respects.
He was like Jamal Adams 2.0. That's what everybody was saying last year. This year was not the case.
Yeah, he missed a lot of tackles. Now, I don't know. He was better the year before, but you know, how much do you put into that? Is a guy looking forward to his paycheck, or I don't know what goes into that.
One thing you can't do at the Patriots, though, at the safety position, is miss tackles.
That's exactly true. Or like really anywhere on the defense. That's the one thing that I remember he talked about. I think it was something Parcells said or something, like you want everybody on the defense to be a good tackler.
Everybody's got to be a good tackler. And at the safety position in particular, they really rely on the safeties to fill against the run, maybe more than just about any other team. The way that they fit against the run is really heavy on the safeties, especially making sure that those kind of 8 to 10 yard runs don't become 40 yarders.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so angles, tackling, being able to step up into the box and do things like that. That is as important to the Patriots at safety than as just about anything, I would say.
Yeah. So that's the one thing with Winfield I liked, or one of the many things I liked about Winfield was, you know, I didn't seem like he was missing tackles either, but like he's just a, you know, high effort, high IQ, you know, playmaker, you know, always around the ball, even in those punt returns where he's sort of taking them back and all that, you know, you just like what you saw when you were watching him.
Absolutely. This podcast has been banging the table for the Patriots to take a safety. Justin Reed last year, I can't remember off the top of my head who our guy was, but I'm sure we had a guy. Every year we're always like, this is the year that they finally start to plan for the future at the safety position. And this year you're looking at this draft and the way that the board is going to set up for them at 23, and there's Delpit, there's McKinney, Antoine Whitfield maybe a little bit later, but you could trade down maybe and still be able to pick him up. Those three guys are going to be guys that are going to get picked in the top 50. And I look at the positional value. I look at the need. I look at the long-term view of the team as well, and not just looking at the draft as something that you're using to fill an immediate need. Maybe you're actually looking at the draft to fill a need 2 years from now, you know, or 3 years from now. And that's the type of guy that I think the Patriots are going to be looking for in the first round. Is not necessary. Last year, they drafted N'Keal Harry because they needed a wide receiver. But they drafted for need. I don't care what Bill Belichick says. He can claim that N'Keal Harry was the best player on his board. I'm not buying it. They drafted N'Keal Harry because they needed a playmaker and they needed a wide receiver. I hope at least that this year they go back to more of a Patriot style draft philosophy of drafting closer to the football, drafting guys for the kind of long-term outlook of the team, and using veteran free agency, trades, other avenues of player acquisition to get the 2020 team where it needs to be.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm curious to see what our final – we got so much film to watch and, like, a lot of stuff to review before we, like, actually go with our official pick. But, I mean, there's – a lot of different directions.
Of course, I said this at the end of the podcast after pumping Justin Jefferson at the beginning of the podcast, and now I'm saying that they shouldn't draft a wide receiver. So I'm already contradicting myself here in one episode, but I think that, you know, both guys are potential players there for the Patriots. And Adam, I think that just about does it for this episode. Is there anything that you want to plug or got going on that you want to mention?
Let's see. I did a write-up a few days ago on all the Massachusetts signees of the Massachusetts FBS and FCS schools, so Boston College, UMass, Harvard, Holy Cross, and Merrimack. Took some time on that, and so sort of just went over the local recruits who went to those schools, a good number of them, especially at Holy Cross and Merrimack. And yeah, we'll see. Spring football is going to be getting around here soon, and so that'll be interesting to follow. So, see what happens there at those places.
Yeah, that is going to be interesting. I love spring football because you always find out, and I know this is more about the bigger schools than the smaller schools, but you always find that, like, sophomore that didn't get to play as a freshman because he had an NFL guy ahead of him. That's like the next guy, you know, and he always seems to break out this time of year. And then you kind of are prepared for him to break out once the season comes around. On clnsmedia.com, I got my combine watch list for tight ends up right now on the website. So go ahead and check that out. I also am going to have a wide receivers one where I'm going to put I have top 20 wide receivers in the draft, going to put them all into tiers. My top tier is pretty obvious, but you can figure out the rest of the tiers that I have going on there. So those two things for the combine. I am going to the combine on Monday night. We'll be there all week next week. Very excited about that. Be able to talk to some of the players during the week and hopefully talk to some people in the league at night and be able to get some rumors or some sort of scoops going on. Obviously very early in the process still, but the combine is really a place where things just start to get set all over the place. You could be sitting in a Chick-fil-A in the mall like I was last year and hear some scout spewing his mouth off about how his team was going to sign a certain player. It happens all the time, and it's really an exciting kind of place to be. It's spring break NFL style. The stuff that actually goes on at the combine for the teams, I'm not really sure how much stock they put into any of it. The interviews and the medicals are really important. The on-field testing is less so important, but certainly they all have thresholds and they have things that you really want to see out of certain guys. We love it all though. So we're going to be here on the podcast coming back to you next week, maybe from Indianapolis. We'll do a pod and we'll put one up with me in Indy, but we'll certainly be back the week after the combine to talk a little bit about what happened at the combine. And then we're definitely going to get into our positional preview. At that point, we're probably going to start with some of the positions that aren't as exciting in the beginning so that we can save the big ones for April when we have a little bit more time to A, research and study film, but also just get a little bit more of a buildup closer to the draft. So wide receivers, quarterbacks, tight ends, those positions we'll probably save for a little bit later, but we'll start with some of the good things early on. Maybe we'll start in the trenches or something like that. But we'll figure that out next week, and we'll get back to you guys on exactly how we're going to schedule that following the combine. But until then, signing off for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.